information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
Here to border
and it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Media Monarchy presents the greatest podcast never sold. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 215 from MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster. It's Bad Friday, or a great Friday to free your mind. It's April 22nd, Earth Day 2011, and we're broadcasting live from the Portland Radio Authority, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups here on Great Friday, Spurlock Sold, and How to Free Your Mind. Necro Nuptials, Royally Cursed, Piss Christ, and Judas. Passover Peril, Blood Sacrifice, Blasphemous Anniversaries, and Caffeinated Consciousness. All that and so very much more, my friends. April 22nd, 2011, episode 215 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Yeah.
we solved all our problems with bigger problems. That's the greatest song I ever heard. Okay, Go. That's their brand new single. The tie-in, of course, with the greatest movie ever sold, which opens today, the new documentary from Morgan Spurlock, and we're going to get into that. But first, my friends, welcome wherever you are in the world, however you are receiving this transmission. I welcome you with wide open arms to episode 215 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show. It's Great Friday. It's Good Friday. It's Bad Friday. It's Earth Day. As the rituals and occult holidays and twilight language swirl around us, we try and track all the latest in alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups here. Broadcasting live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And, of course, thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com and ReveRadio.net for simulcasting this show live. We also thank Radio23.org for the extra hosting. And we thank TragedyAndHope.com for the community. We are on FaceSpace, TwitterTube, and all the other social networking sites where if they're the popular digital town square, that's where we're going to have to go to talk about information that matters. You can contact me, MediaMonarchy at Gmail, and MediaMonarchy is our name on Skype. And I'd ask you to hit the donate button at the top right of MediaMonarchy.com. Your support helps keep this site going and growing. And I want to thank Brian in Missouri, and again to thank Chris on Homeland Lane in Texas for their donations and their support for keeping this going. So as we glance at the news, if we're to believe it, the most important stories are the energy crisis, Lindsay Lohan in Syria. And really, how can you argue with that? We'll keep that page open as we live in interesting times, as the blessing or curse goes. And we'll get right into it. The film opens today. I'm not actually sure how wide it's going. And we discussed this on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, the 70th episode. New Spurlock documentary is the greatest movie ever sold. Financing the hand that slaps or nibbles you, as the New York Times review goes. But to break it down quickly, and we do have so many clips, and again, that's why hopefully folks find this show a compelling listen, because you're not likely to find this much information on a consistent weekly basis anywhere else. And again, we will say it, the greatest podcast never sold, non-commercial, non-corporate, independent alternative media. Morgan Spurlock is the director of Super Size Me, Where in the World is Osama Bin Laden, the creator of the show 30 Days, and his new film, the official title is Palm Wonderful Presents the Greatest Movie Ever Sold. It's all about product placement, marketing, and advertising, funded entirely using product placement, marketing, and advertising.
So what I want to do is make a film all about product placement, marketing, and advertising, where the entire film is funded by product placement, marketing, and advertising. The goal of this whole film is transparency. You're going to see the whole thing take place from beginning to end.
Morgan is an idiot. He thinks all of Americans are idiots, and all the people who sponsored this film are idiots.
So ultimately, what we want to try and do is create what is the Iron Man of documentaries. Everything from top to bottom is branded from beginning to end. First time ever, documentary with collector cups.
They're going to be on that like a wet t-shirt. Is there a plot?
Liz, this is the movie right now.
I think the thing to do is go get a client.
Can we please get Mane and Tail to be the sponsor?
What are the words that you would use to describe Ban? Ban is blank.
That's a great question.
You will never put Morgan, your average Joe, on a billboard, ever.
What if we loaded it with nudity?
Yeah, that would help.
We want to sell the above-the-title sponsorship for $1 million.
Is it going to be Palm Wonderful?
So does $1 million come with 100% guarantee?
For me, yes.
We're in.
Out of this film, they come, they transform, corporatize Morgan Spurlock. That's your challenge.
Well, have you got a pair of these? With product placement, what do you think should be done?
There should be some little pop-up that comes on and says advertisement. It could be a scroll at the bottom, it could be a little pop-up, whatever. But the moment people are being advertised to, they should know they're being advertised to.
What you have now is artists partnering up with different brands to kind of get that extra push.
Sell, sell, sell.
Wonderful presents the greatest movie ever sold.
Where should I be able to go where I don't see one bit of advertising?
To sleep.
That was, of course, Ralph Nader in that official trailer there for the greatest movie ever sold. And let's break it down. And why am I talking about this? Morgan Spurlock and I were born in the same county in southern West Virginia. Needless to say, I feel an affinity for him. Sure, there are lots of other actors and musicians that hail from my home state, but I don't admire their artwork like I do Spurlock's. Now here comes the big however. A quick dig through Morgan Spurlock's websites will show you that he's gotten into bed, whether knowingly or unknowingly or wittingly or unwittingly, with some unsavory characters and organizations, such as the Clinton Global Initiative with all of its Rockefeller Foundation and globalist connections. And I remember seeing this tweet back in February, and it made me curious as to who this guy was. The tweet from twitter.com/Morgan Spurlock just landed in L.A., checked into my hotel, and raced to the Sony lot to have lunch with Michael Linton, the greatest studio chief in the business. Michael Linton, as his Wikipedia page will tell you, is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and Teach for America and on the board of Los Angeles World Affairs Council, the Jewish Television Network, and the RAND Corporation. Even the title, as the title of the film was sold, as you heard there in the trailer, for $1 million to Palm Wonderful. But the title rights to Morgan's recent TED Talk were bought by EMC, a quote-unquote software company, whose dirty details, to say the very least, were exposed by a whistleblower. That whistleblower would be Richard Andrew Grove of TragedyAndHope.com. And he's got it on the record. He's got it in the books. And there are, of course, links for you to go into all of these details. And I say all this and put it out, one, in trying to be transparent. That's the goal, transparency. And I worried my coverage on episode 70 of NewWorldNextWeek.com would spur some kind of backlash, and that people would try and tell me, hey, this guy's hooked up with Clinton Global Initiative and CFR and RAND Corporation people. And worse, I was aware of that stuff. That's why I wanted to put this up, to kind of note that I don't have blind allegiance to the guy. And we have been trying to actively contact him for an interview where we would hope to bring up some of these questions. So laying this out below this post about new Spurlock documentaries, the greatest movie ever sold, fleshes this out, hopefully, and kind of puts it on the record that, yes, I admire this dude. We were born both in Raleigh County, West Virginia. And regardless of the shady globalist connections to the media, I do feel like most of his work shows some kind of heart. So let's check out a quarter of that aforementioned recent TED Talk. And we've played clips from TED Talks in the past, and they're generally quite fascinating because they'll contain things like Bill Gates talking about flying syringes and mosquitoes for vaccines and population control, and others will talk about the Internet of Things and how essentially everything you ever do will be connected to the Internet or the smart grid from the Final Solutions Company. So let's check out Morgan Spurlock's recent TED Talk, and it's called Embracing Transparency.
I have spent the past few years putting myself in situations that are usually very difficult and at the same time somewhat dangerous. I went to prison. Difficult. I worked in a coal mine. Dangerous. I filmed in war zones. Difficult and dangerous. And I spent 30 days eating nothing but this. Fun in the beginning. A little difficult in the middle. Very dangerous in the end. In fact, most of my career I have been immersing myself into seemingly horrible situations for the whole goal of trying to examine societal issues in a way that make them engaging, that make them interesting, that hopefully break them down in a way that make them entertaining and accessible to an audience. So when I knew I was coming here to do a TED Talk that was going to look at the world of branding and sponsorship, I knew I would want to do something a little different. So as some of you may or may not have heard, a couple weeks ago, I took out an ad on eBay. I sent out some Facebook messages, some Twitter messages, and I gave people the opportunity to buy the naming rights to my 2011 TED Talk. That's right, some lucky individual, corporation, for-profit or non-profit, was going to get the once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, because I'm sure Chris Anderson will never let it happen again, to buy the naming rights to the talk you're watching right now, that at the time didn't have a title, didn't really have a lot of content, and didn't really give much hint as to what the subject matter would actually be. So what you were getting was this. Your name here presents my TED Talk that you have no idea what the subject is, and depending on the content, could ultimately blow up in your face, especially if I make you or your company look stupid for doing it. But that being said, it's a very good media opportunity. You know how many people watch these TED Talks? It's a lot. That's just the working title, by the way. So, even with that caveat, I knew that someone would buy the naming rights. Now, if you would have asked me that a year ago, I wouldn't have been able to tell you that with any certainty. But in the new project that I'm working on, my new film, we examine the world of marketing and advertising. And as I said earlier, I put myself in some pretty horrible situations over the years. But nothing could prepare me. Nothing could ready me for anything as difficult or as dangerous as going into the rooms with these guys. You see, I had this idea for a movie.
What I want to do is make a film all about product placement, marketing, and advertising, where the entire film is funded by product placement, marketing, and advertising. So the movie will be called The Greatest Movie Ever Sold. So what happens in The Greatest Movie Ever Sold is that everything from top to bottom, from start to finish, is branded from beginning to end. You know, from the above-the-title sponsor that you'll see in the movie, which is Brand X. Now this brand, the Qualcomm Stadium, the Staples Center.
These people will be married to the film in perpetuity forever. And so the film explores this whole idea. It's what?
It's redundant.
In perpetuity forever. I'm a redundant
just
person. Yeah. that was more for him. It's in perpetuity, period, forever.
But not only are we going to have the Brand X title sponsor, but we're going to make sure we sell out every category we can in the film. So maybe we sell a shoe and it becomes the greatest shoe you ever wore. The greatest car you ever drove from the greatest movie ever sold. You know, the greatest drink you've ever had, courtesy of the greatest movie ever sold.
So the idea is, beyond just showing that brand are part of your life, but actually get them to finance the film?
Get them to finance the film, and actually we show the whole process of how does it work. The goal of this whole film is transparency. You're going to see the whole thing take place in this movie. So that's the whole concept, the whole film, start to finish, and I would love for CG to help make it happen.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, because when I first hear it, it is the ultimate respect for an audience.
I don't know how receptive people are going to be to it, though.
Do you have a perspective, or do you? I don't want to use angle because that sort of has a negative connotation.
But
do you know how this is going to play out?
No idea.
How much money does it take to do this?
$1.5 million.
Okay.
I think that you're going to have a hard time meeting with them, but I think it's certainly worth
pursuing a couple really big obvious brands?
Who knows? Maybe by the time your film comes out, we look like a bunch of blithering idiots.
What do you think the response is going to be?
The responses mostly will be no.
But is it tough to sell because of the film or is it tough to sell because of me?
Both.
Meaning, not so optimistic. So, can you help me? I need help.
I can help.
Okay.
Good.
Good. Awesome.
We got to figure out which brands.
Yeah.
That's the challenge.
When you look like the people you deal with...
We've got some places we can go.
Okay.
Turn the camera off.
I thought turn the camera off meant let's have an off-the-record conversation. Turns out it really means we want nothing to do with your movie. And just like that, one by one, all of these companies suddenly disappeared. None of them wanted anything to do with this movie. I mean, I was amazed. They wanted absolutely nothing to do with this project. And I mean, I was blown away because I thought the whole concept, the idea of advertising was to get your product out in front of as many people as possible, to get as many people to see it as possible. Especially in today's world, this intersection of new media and old media and the fractured media landscape, isn't the idea to get that new buzzworthy delivery vehicle that's going to get that message to the masses? Now, that's what I thought. But the problem was, you see, my idea had one fatal flaw. And that flaw was this. Actually, no, that was not the flaw whatsoever. That wouldn't have been a problem at all. See, this would have been fine. But what this image represents was the problem. See, when you do a Google image search for transparency, this is... this is one of the first images that comes up. So, I like the way you roll, Sergey Brin. No. This was the problem. Transparency. Free from pretense or deceit. Easily detected or seen through. Readily understood. Characterized by visibility or accessibility of information, especially concerning business practices. That last line being probably the biggest problem. You see, we hear a lot about transparency these days. You know, our politicians say it. Our president says it. Even our CEOs say it. But suddenly, when it comes down to it becoming a reality, something suddenly changes. But why?
Well... that was the first quarter or so of Morgan Spurlock's TED Talk, and it was called Embrace Transparency, or Embracing Transparency. And as he noted at the beginning, he sold the title rights to that. And it was bought, as we mentioned before that clip, by EMC. And we referenced, among the other unsavory characters that Spurlock is unwittingly or unknowingly in bed with, such as the Clinton Global Initiative and other CFR characters... EMC bought the title rights to that TED Talk you just listened to. So the link to, and we'll, it's a large story, and we'll just briefly read a point from Richard Andrew Grove's Project Constellation. On April 13th, 2004, I contacted the U.S. Department of Labor, OSHA, and filed a Sarbanes-Oxley claim, as I had irrefutable evidence that EMC violated this Sarbanes-Oxley Act. And ironically, EMC now owned Legato and sold the Sarbanes-Oxley compliance solutions to suckers, I mean others, but did not use it themselves. Put shortly, they were selling bogus Sarbanes-Oxley Econo crash. Remember, this is pre-engineered financial collapse. The software that was supposed to keep track of the bankster's doings had built-in backdoors. Think promise software, if you will. I could go on and on. I thought about playing that entire TED Talk, but then we wouldn't have time to go over all of the other unbelievable developments going on in our new world. So we have our related media memes updates posted below this greatest documentary ever sold. And last weekend we had the Coachella concert, which, as we've noted here, takes place in Indio, California, which has connections to Cabazon Indian Reservation, which has connections to the Octopus and the Promise Software and Inslaw conspiracy. Washington Examiner reported that Coachella boosted the concert experience with technology, and as Jason Pierce of Spiritualized notes within this article, he created an installation but ultimately says, you don't need all this crap and bells and whistles to enjoy music. But we have a day-by-day breakdown from Maximum Performance on the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on CeeLo and Arcade Fire and Suede, and of course, Kanye West literally touches the sky. Someone, VigilantCitizen.com, notes as he discusses media memes and occult symbolism in pop culture. This from the Daily Mail. Rihanna's two half-sisters in Barbados reveal the singer's secret family. Meanwhile, Bob Dylan protests in China in his own way, apparently slipping in lyrics that the Chinese censors hadn't originally approved of. Dog the Bounty Hunter bails out a drunken and arrested Nick Cage. Meanwhile, U.S. advertising to increase 3.1% this year. That's from RBR.com. Meanwhile, MSense, that's the company, and they have a device to track your brainwaves as you watch TV. Deutsche Press Agency reporting on the announcement of Pulitzer Prizes. Pulitzer spreads the prizes. And our last several notes of media memes are mostly unfortunate obituaries. Tim Robbins, actor, director, Mr. X, Susan Sarandon. His mother died 12 days after his father died, and I don't recall if we noted the passing of his father. He was a member of a country group called The Highwaymen. Michael Sarrazin, actor in They Shoot Horses, Don't They?, dies at the age of 70, and I have seen that grueling film with Jane Fonda. And a big band leader, just after his 100th birthday, passes away. His name was Orrin Tucker, which interestingly sounds a whole hell of a lot like Corin Tucker of ex-Slater Kinney. But let's listen to a quickie from Orrin Tucker. You're the one.
Orrin, take it away.
Good afternoon. This is Orrin Tucker and his orchestra coming to you from the beautiful Zeno Springs Hotel. Our first melody, You're the One, from the picture of the same name. You're the one for me, just as every fish has a lovely dish that it swims within the sea. You're the one for me, you're the one for me, just as every bat who's as blind as a bat has a bat that he can see. You're the one for me. Nightingales all practice their scales when love goes by. Chickadees get weak in the knees, and so did I. So it's plain to see, just as every moose who is on the loose finds his M-O-S-E. You're the one for me.
The one for me. The one, the one, the one, the one. Oh, gosh, oh, gee. Can't you see? You are the one for me.
You're the one for me. Just as every gnat likes to hang his hat where a certain gnat might be. You're the one for me. You're the one for me. Just as crocodiles crawl for miles and miles so they'll meet eventually. You're the one for me. Camels blink and run for a drink when love goes by. Geese the chumps get covered with bumps, and so did I. So it's plain to see, just as every goat makes a mental note when he spies his dream goatee. You're the one for me. You're the one that filled the bill, fell head over heels like Jack and Jill. So tell me, you're the one for me.
So apparently that was the title track from a 1941 film. I didn't realize even how connected that song was. And we also heard goats and animals and all of those things that connect the memes that, again, we try and be tapped in here on Media Monarchy. So Orrin Tucker, big band leader, dies at the age of 100. And that track, You Are the One, is the title track from a film, just like our opening track to this greatest podcast never sold. On a sad note, and actually one that kind of scares the hell out of me, Gerard Smith, bassist for TV on the Radio, dies suddenly at the age of 34 of lung cancer. They had just released their new record, Nine Types of Light, and we are going to hear a track from them in just a little bit, and more on that story from HollywoodMemoir.com. We close out our related media memes updates posted below the Spurlock doc for a video that isn't new, and we were going to play a clip from it, but again, too many things, and we can't play clips from all of it. But it's the CFR Elite Globalist Brag Show, and I thought it was a great way to kind of wrap up this post, as we've already discussed the media industrial complex and all of its connections to, ultimately, the same families and the same organizations and the same multi-generational serial killers and corporations. And they like to brag about it sometimes. So perhaps a way to shake all of that off, feel a little tabloidy and dirty, let's move to episode 23 of PeaceRevolution.org, How to Free Your Mind. In this episode, among many, many other things, features the appearance of Jan Ervin of GnosticMedia.com at the recent Free Your Mind concert, or rather, conference. I have media on the brain. There are many videos of some of the other speakers, such as Bob Tuscan, host of the IntelHubRadio.com, where I'm going to be a monthly contributor and guest first Wednesday of every month on OracleBroadcasting.com. But that's a side note. And as we've noted in our show notes here, that it's a good Friday to free your mind. So episode 23 of PeaceRevolution.org is titled How to Free Your Mind. And let's listen to the first few minutes of Jan Ervin of GnosticMedia.com at the Free Your Mind conference.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jan Ervin.
Thank you.
I'm going to have to move through the information quickly here. I've got a lot to present, and basically, as Bob Tuscan discussed earlier, the trivium is about critical thinking, and okay, why are we here? Part one. Literacy is a form of slavery until a systematic form of critical thinking is practiced by the reader. Now, many people may be offended by that statement, but we'll be quickly going into why that is so. The status quo, or our existing state of affairs, is in conflict with human needs for survival. The storm of irrationality has three major components, and give me just a second. Censorship or secrecy, which is the act of occulting information, corruption of education, which leaves you intellectually self-defenseless, and three, absence of nonviolent communication, which prevents constructive action. Ending secrecy and revealing the truth does not automatically give people critical thinking. Providing intellectual self-defense does not automatically prevent censorship, nor does it teach how to communicate. Learning how to communicate does not end in secrecy, nor does it provide critical thinking. So let's begin by defining 13 simple concepts. Number one, axiom of non-aggression is the ethical stance which asserts that aggression is inherently illegitimate. Aggression is defined as the initiation of physical force against persons or property, the threat of such or fraud upon persons or their property. In contrast to pacifism, the non-aggression principle does not preclude violent self-defense. The principle is a deontological or rule-based ethical stance. Education to bring about, to extract, to provide a form of, or to produce from a state of occultation, or in other words, to take out of the hidden. From the Latin verb educo, to lead out or draw out. Occult from the Latin verb occulto, to hide or to keep secret. Therefore, education is the process of unocculting reality. Autonomy, from ancient Greek, auto-self and nomos law, one who gives oneself their own law, is a concept found in moral, political, and bioethical philosophy. Within these contexts, it refers to the capacity of a rational individual to make an informed, uncoerced decision. Government is derived from the Latin word gubernare, a verb meaning to control, combined with mente, a Latin noun meaning mind. Government means to control the mind.
Now, hopefully by cutting it there just as it was getting going, I whet your appetite to go check out that entire talk and check out the entire episode 23, How to Free Your Mind, The Occulted Keys of Wisdom, from peacerevolution.org. And again, we're so thankful to be associated with that community that includes, who you just heard, Jan Irvin of GnosticMedia.com, as well as SchoolSucks, Maria.net, and CorbettReport.com, all under TragedyAndHope.com. My brain's still swirling around the breakdown of the word government, gubernare, and mind, to control the mind. So many answers are within our very words and the way they're spelled. The latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com is the 70th episode of my weekly video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Syrian Subversion, Spurlock Sold, Goodbye Google. Now, the Goodbye Google story number 3, we went over on the B-side episode where they are killing Google Video, and we only have about another week or so to grab and download any videos from there. Spurlock Sold as the second story we, of course, already went over in great detail for you just a few minutes earlier. And the Syrian Subversion will come towards the end of this episode 215. So again, my friends, I implore you, NewWorldNextWeek.com will send you straight to the Blip hosting that you can subscribe to, and you can get high-quality, low-quality video, audio-only, captions, and so very much more. So, thanks to James Corbett of CorbettReport.com for making New World Next Week happen. The latest alternative media from CorbettReport.com, episode 182, Requiem for the Suicided, Kenneth Trentadue. He was murdered in the Oklahoma City Federal Transfer Center in August of 1995. The authorities ruled it as a suicide. Episode 182 explores the incredible story of Jesse Trentadue, Kenny's brother, who spent the last two decades working to find out what really happened to his brother and how it connects to the Oklahoma City bombing. One of our numerous blasphemous anniversaries that are swirling around us right here in the Ides of April that we will return to throughout this episode. But the latest videos from Corbett Report, Sunday Update, Jail the Banksters, Libya Lies, and another appearance on Russia Today on NATO fighting the Cold War in Libya. And as we noted on the previous B-side episode, NATO, of course, using depleted uranium in this humanitarian mission. The latest interviews with Jeff Ruck, Jesse Trentadue, Bob Chapman, and Holland Vanden Weyhoff, and even a brand new article, China Firing Back in New Cold War. So much amazing, independent, alternative media coming from CorbettReport.com, and my hat's off to him as always. And as we say, surrounding all these things, Corbett Report, Tragedy and Hope, Media Monarchy, and here in a moment, Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. We are all essentially independent outlets who need your support and donations and subscriptions to keep doing this. So we'll briefly jump over to CyberspaceWar.com, where my man Alan in Omaha, one of our lead writers and editors over at CyberspaceWar.com, noted the recent appearance of Douglas Dietrich on Clyde Lewis's Ground Zero, which, as you should know, and we've been reporting it here and touting it here and shouting it from the metaphorical rooftops, that Clyde Lewis' show Ground Zero has been picked up by KXL 101 FM and 750 AM and worldwide on KXLnews.com. 5 nights a week, 9 to midnight. It's been amazing so far, and I think it's really going to drive a wedge and start to make things happen on the otherwise completely corporate and boring airwaves. So we have the links for you to listen live to that show as well. Subscribe to the podcast, and you can get the show. This past Monday, April 18th, Clyde had Tracy R. Twyman on as a guest and has also posted up a recent article from her. And, of course, we went over a couple of her recent pieces on the upcoming royal ritual happening a week from today. Necronuptials, the myth of the Virgin Queen and the corpse bride embedded in the royal wedding of Will and Kate. And we hope to have Tracy Twyman discussing the royal rituals and the necronuptials. But Clyde has a new article up for each show. So there's going to be 5 articles and 5 episodes a week. I hope he can keep it up, because that's a hell of a lot of content. Some of the other episodes and articles: The Birther's Butt Boogie and The Deadly Gyre, The Electric Vortex Anomaly, and You Wouldn't Believe Me Even If I Said So. All that and so much more from Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. So now that we've contacted the other side with our Edison box, with our medium, it is, of course, Good Friday. So we want to hop to holyhexes.com, the newest site in the media monarchy kingdom, discussing the occult, religion, and society. And we'll begin with our 421 pop culture list of headlines. Royally cursed rapture, where tabloid astrology prediction spells doom for the royals. That's from vexnews.com, but that just sounds silly, right? Let's get it from a more appropriate source, like nationalterroralert.com. Terrorist threat possible at royal wedding. Meanwhile, around the pop culture world, UK man gets 70 days for burning a Quran. GOP 2012 hopeful. Michelle Bachmann notes that the U.S. is cursed if we reject Israel. Meanwhile, thefablife.com reporting that a pregnant Kate Hudson, who's the daughter of Goldie Hawn, who already has a kid with Chris Robinson of the Black Crows, is now about to have a kid with Matthew Bellamy of Muse, the allegedly anti-New World Order band. She made some recent TV appearance, and this website says she dabbles in light witchcraft to predict the baby's sex. You know, where you dangle the ring over the belly in the direction. Now, why did I get that? Is because we subscribe to search terms and phrases to make sure we get that in the cascade of news and information and raw data that is out there. Meanwhile, Alaskan militias rapture and the Bible scriptures simply don't jibe. That's from ADN.com. That's Anchorage Daily News. And the last note on this 421 pop culture royally cursed rapture from the New York Times: using history to sell clothes? Don't try it with the pharaohs. Attack on blasphemous art fires debate on the role of religion in France. This from The Guardian. When New York artist Andre Serrano plunged a plastic crucifix into a glass of his own urine and photographed it in 1987 under the title Piss Christ, he said he was making a statement on the misuse of religion. Controversy has followed the work ever since, but reached an unprecedented peak on Palm Sunday when it was attacked with hammers and destroyed after an anti-blasphemy campaign by French Catholic fundamentalists in the southern city of Avignon. the violent slashing of the picture and another Serrano photograph of a meditating nun has plunged secular France into soul-searching about Christian fundamentalism and Nicolas Sarkozy's use of religious populism in his bid for re-election next year. It also marks a return to an old standoff between Serrano and the religious right that dates back to more than 20 years to Reagan-era republicanism in the U.S. The photograph, full title is Immersion, Piss Christ, was made in 1987 as part of Serrano's series showing religious objects submerged in fluids such as blood and milk. In 1989, right-wing Christian senators' criticism of Piss Christ led to a heated U.S. debate on public arts funding. Republican Jesse Helms told the Senate Serrano was not an artist. He's a jerk. And of course, those things aren't mutually exclusive for artists or Congress critters. And these are our memes that we see swirling around, again, our Ides of March and our high, holy, occult, pagan ritual days. And we're just trying to read the Twilight language. From Raw Story, Nebraska Bishop says no communion for Planned Parenthood supporters. Support for the reproductive health care provider Planned Parenthood, of course founded by racist eugenicist Margaret Sanger, it was awarded great plaudits from the Nazis. Beginning again. Support for the reproductive health care provider Planned Parenthood continues to be a contentious issue for Catholic groups and bishops. According to Bishop Fabian Bruskowitz of Lincoln, Nebraska, Catholic lawmakers who support Planned Parenthood should be denied communion because they've defected from the church's faith. It advocates contraception, Berkowitz told LifeSite News. In its origins, from Margaret Sanger, it concentrates on racism. It believes certain races are inferior. It is certainly a eugenic aspect to it. Extermination of people who are considered unfit to live a la Nazis. And of course, abortion is an abominable crime, he continued. The Second Vatican Council is very clear about that. Planned Parenthood is the largest abortion supplier, business, and purveyor in the United States. Isn't it interesting to see these notes that the fake enemies and controlled oppositions in these gangster multi-generational families? There are those points that it actually seems as though they are attacking the other positions. And we've noted many, many times here, we don't necessarily subscribe to the unified field conspiracy theory that it's all one party and it's not the Jews run it all or the Catholics run it all. Suppose it's unfortunately not that simple. And we should be careful not to fall into that trap. And again, you know, so many times, and what I was going to say when we were discussing the Trivium and listening to the clip from Jan Ervin at the Free Your Mind conference. I'm learning, trying my hardest as I go. Yes, being on the radio gives you some air of authority, and that's even what they will teach you in broadcasting school. Don't say, you know, oh, it's about 3 o'clock. No, you tell people what time it is. You have an authoritative position. I don't really want to take that, because I'm learning as I go. And I come away from the site and the show every time, every day, going, oh, I could have done that better. But I digress. Let's continue with our Holy Hexes updates, and it's also very timely. From the Examiner, Pope served with court papers in molestation case. It is official. The Pope and two top Vatican officials have been served with court papers associated with the Milwaukee Area School for the Deaf molestation case in which 200 deaf children were alleged to have been molested by Reverend Lawrence C. Murphy between 1950 and 1974. The plaintiff's lawyer, Jeff Anderson, confirmed on April 12th that the lawsuit has been going through official channels and that the Vatican has received notice of the suit. The suit alleges that the Pope and two other top Vatican officials knew about the accusations of sexual molestation and called off investigations. Even though Reverend Lawrence C. Murphy has since died, the case continues because of the allegation that the Vatican attempted to systematically cover up the case. It could even be said that they have obstructed justice and put other children in harm's way. If this case is allowed to proceed, it will open up the door for similar cases throughout the world. Earlier this year, a Philadelphia grand jury revealed a similar sexual molestation scandal involving 37 priests of the Catholic Church. And we reported for you just a few short weeks ago the Jesuit priest and the long-running abuse, and now the court cases, and now the shreds of justice coming out here in the Pacific Northwest. And isn't it interesting to think about limited hangout sometimes? Is it possible that these stories, wretched and disgusting as they are, in a way, and I believe I've been trying to catch up on all of my favorite podcasts. I've been behind lately. And so trying to catch up on Red Ice Radio, I believe it was their recent interview with Peter LaVenda, who is, of course, the author of the fantastic Sinister Forces trilogy, and that's one of my most popular interviews and certainly one of my favorites. But he was talking about the secret space program, and of course, so much of that connects to the Nazis. And the Vatican's connection, the rat lines, the Vatican assisting Nazis to get out. Was it the enemy of my enemy is my friend, in that they share a mutual anti-Semitism? There's probably that, and there's probably so much more. Is it perhaps interesting that we discuss this abuse, but never discuss the fact of their complicity in assisting Nazis escaped, and then assuring that committed Nazis were brought on board as part of Operation Paperclip in this country? So in this story from the Examiner, Pope served with court papers in molestation case. We do have other links for you. Of course, as always, we try and take those couple extra steps and provide supplemental contextual links for, again, you to go do more research for yourself, and me too. We break down the sexual abuse scandal in the Catholic Archdiocese of Philadelphia. We have links for that. We have documents from the New York Times in the Reverend Lawrence C. Murphy abuse case. And also one link to CatholicCulture.org. Continuing on Holy Hexes from the National Geographic, study hints legendary saints were real and were buried alive. The skeletons of two married early Christian saints, said to have been buried alive nearly 2,000 years ago, may have been identified in Italy, scientists announced this past Thursday. Analysis of the skeletons, sealed off for centuries in an Italian cathedral until recently, seems to support the legend of Chrysanthus and Daria, who were said to have been persecuted in the city of Rome for being Christians. According to ancient stories, the Roman Empire killed the celibate Roman husband and wife in the 3rd century AD after they had converted many Romans to the fledgling religion. Though there's no way to identify the skeletons with 100% certainty, all of the evidence we have gathered points toward the relics having belonged to Chrysanthus and Daria, investigation leader Ezio Folcheri, a paleopathologist at Italy's University of Genoa, saying in a statement. And I believe if we follow that link back to National Geographic, I'm sure there is a tie-in television show, because of course there's a tie-in for everything. Collector's cups for documentaries. Another one for the Daily Mail, and I know we find so many stories coming from the Daily Mail, which, yes, is essentially a tabloid, but in this world of shell games and tabloid news, it's interesting where you find your information from. Was the Last Supper 24 hours earlier? Christians have long marked Jesus Christ's Last Supper on Maundy Thursday. That's M-A-U-N-D-Y. That was a new one for me. But new research by leading academics suggests that they've got the wrong date. Professor Colin Humphrey, scientist at the University of Cambridge, has now concluded that the final meal took place on the Wednesday before the crucifixion, a day earlier than previously accepted. He believes his findings, which are likely to cause ripples among millions of Christians, could present a case for finally introducing a fixed date for Easter. More on that story from Faith World with the link provided for you. They also present a solution to apparent contradictions in the Gospels and logistical issues relating to the hours before the crucifixion. In a new book, The Mystery of the Last Supper, Professor Humphreys uses a combination of biblical, historical, and astronomical research to address the precise nature and timing of Jesus' final meal with his disciples. Researchers have long been puzzled by an apparently fundamental biblical inconsistency. While Matthew, Mark, and Luke all assert that the Last Supper coincided with the start of the Jewish festival of Passover, John claims it took place before Passover. The contradiction has presented what has been described as the thorniest problem in the New Testament, but Professor Humphreys has now concluded that Jesus, along with Matthew, Mark, and Luke, may have been using a different calendar to John. So, yes, there is that link to the case for a fixed date for Easter. And we have recently discussed the case for changing the calendar. And then we had the 311 earthquake, which shortened our days. Holy hexes indeed. Here's a question you probably wouldn't ask. Does God approve of Lady Gaga's outrageous behavior? After one of her concerts, Lady Gaga was met by Christian protesters who were angry with the lyrics of the singer's new single, Judas, and a video to the song that will be released by Easter. Believers say that Judas is an affront to their religious feelings. Does Gaga intend to deliberately provoke the believers by using religious symbols in her songs? Surely not. The music video to the song Judas has not yet been released, or at least at this posting, but some Christians are angered by the promise of Lady Gaga to release it by Easter, as well as the fact that the singer is going to appear in this video in the image of Mary Magdalene. The Gaga Vision video of the pop star displays Lady Gaga departing in a limousine after a concert in support of her tour, Monster Ball, and encountering Christian protesters. "Believe in Christ or end in hell," said a poster held by one of the protesters. The religious zealot was yelling that the singer's accusations, or actions rather, displease God and are contrary to human values. And of course, there are related updates, and we have links to figure out more about Judas. And as we see all of these things, there's no accident. If it happens, you can bet that it happens on purpose, and you can apply that to politics as much as we can apply that to the media industrial complex. So let's do something it's going to hurt both of us, but let's listen to a few moments of Judas.
Ah!
Yikes. That's pretty rough, my friends. I apologize for that. But we've, you know, of course, inescapably in the way that so many of the pop culture memes are, we've talked about her so much, but I don't believe we've ever had the pleasure of listening to that fantastic music. We could do whole episodes about that, but I would just send you to VigilantCitizen.com to read all about the occult symbolism in the music. But the music's so bad, it sounds like it's just bad techno-pop from the 90s, which maybe that's the idea. The songs from her all really sound the same, because they all have that kind of bizarre chanting in the beginning that, to me, reminds me of Yvonnette Nuage. Join the Navy. The Simpsons episode where the military uses backward masking in teen pop music to boost recruiting. But we don't have time to start playing that stuff backwards. But we do have a couple related updates below this. As again, isn't always interesting that, oh, this new book or this new discovery or this new thing just happens to come out right at the pertinent anniversary time. But an article on the Belief blog, is Judas in heaven or hell? And as the Beach Boys would say, God only knows. The disgusting update to this, but even worse, it's just the foreshadowing of how dark it's going to get here in just a little bit. Woman mutilates cat to make outfit for Lady Gaga concert. She killed her cat and turned it into a costume on her, and she is now, of course, arrested and is in a psych ward. Our final note from Holy Hexes was just posted earlier this morning, and we can fit it in. As I've told many, many times, I'm generally adding things to the show to the minute before I leave to come to the studio here. But from Wired, God is a general. Passover's lessons for war. This week, Jews around the world observe the festival of Passover. It's a remembrance of slavery and a celebration of liberation. But the story of Exodus also offers many political and military lessons for today, as well as a reminder that, as written in Ecclesiastes, there is nothing new under the sun. And this article gets into seven key takeaways for the modern commander, hot from the burning bush. Ha ha ha. So many puns and memes to keep track of. But we don't have time to dive into all of them. Needless to say, we've tried to cover most of the angles in the family of sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom. And so that previous one, as was many of the others on Holy Hexes, posted thanks to Steve out in London, out in the garden, and on cyberspacewar.com, my man Alan out in Omaha, he made a note about the Ides of April and posted it as blood sacrifice to fire god. Spring festivals are in the air, and so are important occult dates. The Advent of Deception website provides a summary of the dates from April 19th through May 1st, May Day. The present writer accepted this critical period as a time to focus attention only after a continuous flow of recent events that, of course, you probably need no reminding of. But April 19th, 93, the compound at Waco stormed by government troops and tanks. April 19th, 95, the Oklahoma City bombing. April 20th, 99, Columbine school shooting. April 20th, 2010, the Gulf oil spill. But, of course, we also had the Virginia Tech massacre. And, of course, Patriots Day and 420 and Hitler and all of those other connections. But continuing, a fire sacrifice, according to the aforementioned article, is required around April 19th. To conclude this period, there is the Beltane Festival, also called Walpurgis Night. This is the highest day on the Druidic witch's calendar, while May 1st is the Illuminati's second most sacred holiday, their founding day in 1776. Human sacrifice is required, emotionally or physically. Since the celebration officially began the night before Beltane, the tradition has developed among occultists to celebrate Beltane as a two-day ceremony. This tradition was strong enough that Adolf Hitler decided to kill himself on April 30th at 3:30 p.m., thus creating a 333 and placing his suicide sacrifice within the Beltane time frame. So we wouldn't be surprised if something happens during this 13-day stretch. Predictions of earthquakes due to planetary alignments, predictions of revolutionary turmoil in Russia, or a panic during a festival in Italy on May 1st, the beatification of Pope John Paul II. You can all find all of those things on the net. And of course, the royal ritual coming a week from today. And we covered last week the Beltane cake connections. And you've heard us refer to something called Project Bluebeam before. Whether it's an actual thing has ceased to matter, because ultimately it's an idea of a fake return of a Messiah. Whether that's Maitreya, or the Buddha, or Muhammad, or Christ, or the return of some extraterrestrial beings. Return implying they, of course, have been here before. So we ended the previous B-side episode with a depressing note about our owners from George Carlin from one of his audiobooks that I've recently been diving into, because it's one of the few things of his that I haven't digested. When will Jesus bring the pork chops? And I found it among the 88 tracks. Again, quite interesting of how the synchro mysticism happens and the memes present themselves. Or as I walk around with a hammer, I see nails everywhere. But a very pertinent piece from When Will Jesus Bring the Pork Chops from George Carlin hit me, and I think we should play it right here because it makes the connections and draws, I think, a great light to what we're discussing here, whether it's predictive programming or Project Bluebeam, as we're here in our holy hexes and necronuptials and all of those things. Let's listen to the late, great George Carlin.
It came from out of the sky. I find it discouraging and a bit depressing when I notice the unequal treatment afforded by the media to UFO believers on the one hand, and on the other, to those who believe in an invisible supreme being who inhabits the sky, especially as the latter belief applies to the whole Jesus Messiah Son of God fable. You may have noticed that in the media, UFO believers are usually referred to as buffs, a term used to diminish and marginalize them by relegating them to the ranks of hobbyists and mere enthusiasts. They're made to seem like kooks and quaint dingbats who have the nerve to believe that in an observable universe of trillions upon trillions of stars, and most likely many hundreds of billions of potentially inhabitable planets, some of those planets may have produced life forms capable of doing things that we can't do. What nerve. On the other hand, those who believe in an eternal, all-powerful being, a being who demands to be loved and adored unconditionally, and who punishes and rewards according to his whims, are thought to be worthy, upright, credible people. This, in spite of the large numbers of believers who are clearly close-minded fanatics. To my way of thinking, there is every bit as much evidence for the existence of UFOs as there is for the existence of God. Probably far more. At least in the case of UFOs, there have been countless taped and filmed, and by the way, unexplained, sightings from all over the world, along with documented radar evidence seen by experienced military and civilian radar operators. This does not even begin to include the widespread testimony of not only highly trained, experienced military and civilian pilots who are selected for their jobs in part for their above-average eyesight and mental stability, but also of equally well-trained, experienced law enforcement officers. Such pilots and law enforcement people are known to be serious, sober individuals who would have a lot to lose were they to be associated
associated with anything resembling kooky, outlandish beliefs. Nonetheless, they have taken the risk of revealing their experiences because they are convinced they have seen something objectively real that they consider important. All of these accounts are ignored by the media. Granted, the world of UFO belief has its share of kooks and nuts and fringe people, but have you ever listened to some of these religious true believers? Have you ever heard of any extreme, bizarre behavior and outlandish claims associated with religious zealots? Could any of them be considered kooks, nuts, or dingbats? A fair person would have to say yes. But the marginal people in these two groups don't matter in this argument. What matters is the prejudice and superstition built into the media coverage of the two sets of beliefs. One is treated reverently and accepted as received truth. The other is treated laughingly and dismissed out of hand. As evidence of the above premise, I offer one version of a typical television news story heard each year on the final Friday of Lent. Today is Good Friday, observed by Christians worldwide as a day that commemorates the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, whose death redeemed the sins of mankind. Here is the way it should be written. Today is Good Friday, observed worldwide by Jesus buffs, as the day on which the popular bearded cultural figure, sometimes referred to as the Messiah, was allegedly crucified and, according to legend, died for mankind's so-called sins. Today kicks off a holy weekend that culminates on Easter Sunday, when it is widely believed this dead Savior, who also, by the way, claimed to be the son of a sky-dwelling invisible being known as God, mysteriously rose from the dead. According to the legend, by volunteering to be killed and actually going through with it, Jesus saved every person who has ever lived and every person who will ever live from an eternity of suffering in a fiery region popularly known as hell, providing, so the story goes, that the person to be saved firmly believes this rather fanciful tale. That would be an example of unbiased news reporting. Don't wait around for it to happen. The aliens will land first.
Tell them of the sun to the greener.
with a band name that's pretty appropriate to the show you are listening to. That was TV on the Radio with the final track from their brand new record, Nine Types of Light. And that track is called Caffeinated Consciousness. And I can certainly jive with that. As we noted a little bit ago, unfortunately, Gerard Smith, the bass player for TV on the Radio, died suddenly at the age of 34 of lung cancer. They have canceled their tour and just posted a note on their website. So, my friends, that's the name we gave to the 421 News Purge, Caffeinated Consciousness, and it's going to get crazy, so start taking notes. We begin with 9/11 updates, and we first go to myfoxnewyork.com, and this should show you what we do on the show. NFL to start their season with the New York Jets flying into New York Giants for the 10th anniversary of September 11th. Putting it in your face, Jets versus Giants in New York. And if that's not bizarre enough, how about a little flashback for you? A little wrestling predictive programming as the Mega Powers demolish the Twin Towers.
Everyone, you want to know how powerful the Mega Powers are? Everybody knows that the Twin Towers are big, strong, high buildings. Yes, larger than any buildings in New York City. These guys are big and bad. Now, they may be earthquake-proof, they may be typhoon-proof, they may be tidal wave-proof, but when the Mega Powers, the strongest force in the universe, goes against the Twin Towers, it's going to be like a fault line going right through their foundation, and the Richter scale is going to spin around 42 times, go into orbit, and you're going to see the Twin Towers come crumbling down, yeah.
Predictive programming from 20 years ago, fascinatingly enough, the Mega Powers destroying the Twin Towers. Charlie Sheen enrages 9/11 conspiracy groups. That is unfortunately from TMZ, but it is the follow-up of something we told you here now a good month or so ago that, isn't it interesting, Charlie Sheen, after he got the attention of the world, wasn't talking about 9/11 anymore. We also have brand new entries on the fantastic complete 9/11 timeline from historycommons.org. Their blog breaks down all the latest editions on so many areas concerning the official story of 9/11. Our final note on 9/11 updates comes from the intelhub.com, and I believe this source is back, unfortunately, to an exclusive from Huffington Post. 9/11 first responders now considered possible terrorists as part of their health bills. They have to make sure they go through some terror screening, that they're not terrorists. Just like small little boys in Oregon and little girls in New Orleans airports. But on to the drug war. In honor of 420, Christian perspectives on smoking pot. More on that from the Believe It or Not blog on the Houston Chronicle. Of course, this past Wednesday was the quote-unquote stoner holiday of 420. Furthermore, the audacity of no dope. Obama threatens Washington State's legal marijuana. More on that from the Intel Hub and AllGov. Meanwhile, Big Pharma set to take over the medical marijuana market. As we accurately predicted for you many, many months ago. Even as, of course, Holder and the Obamasiah originally claimed they weren't going to go after it. So what is this about? As we see these things kind of connect, as we see Big Pharma, as we see the drug war, as we see even the race war. Mexican drug cartels trained by the U.S.
Tell us about the Zetas. I mean, these are people that essentially the U.S. trained, yeah. And now they're fighting against us.
Yeah. The Zetas were part of an elite military group that the U.S. Special Forces and others trained in counter-narcotics to help us with fight the drug war in Mexico in the 1990s. And a lot of their officers decided in the mid to late 90s, well, you know, we can make a lot more money if we switch sides. And so they took our weapons, our training, our expertise, and our know-how, and hired themselves out initially to the Gulf Cartel to be their enforcers, their hitmen. And now they're working for themselves, and they're amongst the most vicious of all these organizations down there. And so that's the lesson. You know, our politicians say, well, it's a shared responsibility. We have to help Mexico fight the drug war, you know, with us, because we both have responsibilities here. Well, that's a nice political sentiment, but if you can't guarantee the loyalty of the people you train at the end of the day, it's a mistake. Because all it takes is a couple of bad apples in strategic places to leak the information about when the next bus is coming, who they're going after, how they're going to do it. And if you train these people to fight the drug war, you conversely show them how to evade capture as well.
Of course, yeah. And I mean, this is something that, unfortunately, I feel like the U.S. runs into everywhere. How many enemies are we now fighting that in the past used to be our friend, whom we used to fund and supply weapons to? You know, it's like a broken record. It keeps happening over and over again.
Yes.
Now, what do you make of this, the fact that they fired 3,200 federal agents in Mexico? I mean, Calderon, his policies are not popular in Mexico. 73% of the population, according to this new poll from a newspaper in Mexico City, said that they don't support his policies. So is this kind of a move, just a, you know, a ploy to try to get public support?
Well, there's good and bad news out of this, right? The good side is that they're actually capturing some of these people or finding the people who have suspect ties and behaviors and starting to deal with them. And there are another 1,000 that are being disciplined internally. But it's discouraging when you realize that's 10% of the federal police force can't be trusted. And so imagine trying to set up, you know, roadblocks and operations. All it takes is a few strategically placed people who can be bribed very easily, because the pay rates of these federal officers are so low in Mexico that the cartel can buy them off very easily.
Once again, know who your friends are and you know who you can't trust, unfortunately,
because
they'll turn.
And for a lot of these people, they're given a choice. You know, we call it corruption, but I have a hard time using that word. If you know, they make an offer, bullet, silver or lead. You want to take a bullet, you want to take a bribe. And if you don't take the bribe, we will kill you and we won't get prosecuted.
And that aforementioned Mexican drug cartel trained by U.S. Special Forces is detailed in a pretty lengthy breakdown from the Washington Times as brutal Mexican drug gang crosses into the U.S. But wrapping it all together, all of our drug war updates that are so intricately related, we see as Big Pharma's pain medications kill way more people than smack and coke combined.
The White House is launching a major new effort to curb prescription drug abuse, underscoring the fastest growing epidemic in the United States. Alarming new statistics reveal widespread use of all age groups, killing more people than heroin and cocaine combined. There are over 5 million Americans abusing painkillers, second only to those using marijuana. Joining me now to offer insight on the challenges of addiction is nationally recognized interventionist Christina Wansley. Good afternoon, Christina.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. White House National Drug Policy website shows nearly 56% of Americans getting prescription drugs for non-medical use from friends or relatives. How on earth do we put a stop to this?
It's a really difficult issue, Martin, and it's large and it's significant. Addiction is generational. I mean, I've worked with families where you have addicted grandparents and parents and even children. It's a really baffling issue, and I think, to be frank with you, one of the hardest parts about intervention on this issue is that we as a culture have become entitled. We have a severe entitlement to being comfortable. And so discomfort of any kind, be it physical or emotional, is intolerable to us. So we can find doctors that will prescribe medication for any ailment you have, from restless leg syndrome to fibromyalgia and everything else in between. So parents find help, children get into it. It happens all the time.
Speaking of children, Christina, one of the big issues is the disposal of medication by adults, because children seem to go into the medicine cabinet at home and simply excavate the cabinet and then go and use these drugs.
You're absolutely correct. And it happens so innocently, I mean, on a parent's behalf. You know, for example, in my practice, I'll have women who've given, you know, childbirth, and so they have Vicodin laying laying around, or they had a C-section and they just keep it laying around sometimes for years. And then you have a teen child who kind of gets into that. So it can happen really innocently, and parents need to pay attention to that. The other thing that is abused often by young people are even like cough syrups. You know, that's where it can begin. NyQuil, cough syrups. You have to really pay attention to what you have in your house. Disposing of medication is so important. Take it back to your doctor. That would be the best way to do it if you have medication left over.
Parents take responsibility. Christina Wunslick, thank you again.
Thank you.
So as Big Pharma's pain medications kill more people than heroin and cocaine combined, let's get a little flashback perspective from a story we reported to you back on January 22nd of this year. Federal Research Center will help develop medicines. The Obama administration has become so concerned about the slowing pace of new drugs coming out of the pharmaceutical industry that officials have decided to start a $1 billion government drug development center to help create medicine. So which is it? We move to our murder and mayhem updates on this 421 News Purge, Caffeinated Consciousness, where CNN asks the question that we've already addressed here. What is it about mid-April and violence in America? And as Lauren Coleman of Copycat Effect gets into more mayhem coming for April 2011... And furthermore, from LouRockwell.com, from Waco to Libya, 18 years of humanitarian mass murder. And it gets worse and worse and worse. Body of North Carolina teen found in Maryland after her disappearance in December.
A case which has dragged on for nearly 4 months came to a close with the discovery of two bodies pulled from this area of the Susquehanna River yesterday. A female was pulled from the river around 10 a.m., a man's body 4 hours later. We're told a tattoo on the lower right leg of the female victim could be one of the factors investigators used to determine it was Barnes. According to the website findthemissing.org, Barnes had a similar tattoo in the same location. Barnes went missing in December while in Maryland visiting her half-sister. Months of extensive searching turned up nothing. In March, investigators said they had ruled out anyone that had come and gone from Barnes' sister's apartment while she was there as a suspect.
From Bodymore Murderland to the TSA and air traffic control and all of the events concerning our airport insecurity. So the latest near miss and the latest control tower fiasco has Transportation Secretary LaHood stressing responsibility.
The air traffic controller in Cleveland wasn't watching only the radar on the job. The controller was watching a movie. Get this, the controller's mic was on, so pilots heard about 3 minutes worth of Samuel L. Jackson's movie Cleaner. Well, a pilot reported it to control tower, and now the FAA officials are touring the country talking with the controllers about work rules.
And really trying to talk to controllers, but also talking to them about personal responsibility. Part of it's personal responsibility, showing up, doing your job, and doing it as a well-rested controller.
There's not a silver bullet or a golden ticket to mitigate fatigue in our work environment. But what we're looking at is to take 12 steps of a recommended group that came out and start implementing some of these to mitigate fatigue.
Well, the FAA suspended the controller that we're talking about in Cleveland and the manager. It has also suspended 6 other controllers who allegedly slept on the job. Investigators are also looking into 2 other possible sleeping incidents in Lubbock,
Texas. And the golden ticket twilight language is quite interesting. The Cleaner, Samuel Jackson movie about someone who cleans up crime scenes. So that's interesting just to tie in the air industry. And the Cleaner is also part of the syndicate on The X-Files. Oprah's Dr. Melvin Levine commits suicide. A frequent guest on The Oprah Winfrey Show commits suicide after being accused of pedophilia. And unbelievably, Charles Manson breaks his 20-year silence to hype global warming. More on Manson and the family from The Telegraph and from The Daily Mail. And isn't it fascinating, again, a creature with connections to Scientology and sinister forces would come back and give us the word about the first great global revolution the first global revolution, as the Club of Rome would call it. Obamasiah updates. The Obamasiah appears in the City of Angels as residents urged to just stay home to avoid the gridlock. More on that from the Los Angeles Times, because, of course, he is on tour. The campaign 2012 has begun for the Obamasiah. And, of course, he went to the NSA, Intel, NQTEL connected Facebook headquarters for an online town hall, and we give the link over on Cyberspace where you can go check out that event page and see the kind of questions that were ignored. Meanwhile, Obama invokes Christian beliefs at the Easter prayer breakfast. More on that from BeliefNet. And tying in with the aforementioned air traffic control fiasco comes the story of the jet carrying the First Lady aborting a landing at Andrews Air Force Base. And the birther meme continues. The birther nation. An article from Captain Eric May over on VeteransToday.com. But Drudge Report getting into the missing records in Hawaii and the missing records in Kenya and the missing records in Indonesia. And will the controversial Jerome Corsi's new book reveal Obama's quote-unquote true identity? Perhaps far more important from allgov.com, White House visitor logs leave large blanks. And there's your transparency. There's your change you can believe in. It's the same secret cronies moving into the White House and then going out to the private sector. And that's a limited hangout. But on around the fake political paradigm, Nevada Senator John Ensign to resign amid investigations, and Andrew Breitbart accuses MSNBC of being controlled by Soros, Podesta, Ayers, and Media Matters. And the sad thing is he's essentially right. Now, I realize as we're blasting through all of these updates, and we made a reference to Michelle Bachmann in the previous B-side episode, where she notes that the U.S. is cursed if we reject Israel. She was also talking about the birther issue.
I do want to get onto some other subjects. Donald Trump was on this program yesterday. He seems to be at the center of the Republican debate right now. He's at 8% in our latest poll. You're down at 1%. Karl Rove and other Republicans call
him
a joke.
That means you've got room to grow.
You've got room to grow. Sarah Palin has praise for him. Do you take his candidacy seriously?
Well, I think that it's up to Donald Trump if he takes his candidacy seriously. Certainly, he's had a good foothold with a lot of people in the United States. I think they're intrigued by him and what he has to say.
He continues to raise these questions about the president's birth status, and last night you were on Fox News suggesting the president should come forward with his birth certificate as well.
Aaron, what I've said about that is I was asked the question about that, and Republicans are constantly asked to vouch for the authenticity of the birth certificate. The only one who can is the clerk of court in the county where someone is born, and that's where people should go. Don't ask Republicans, go ask the clerk.
But actually, one of your supporters in the state of Iowa has put forward a bill that would require presidential candidates to file their birth certificate with their candidacy. Do you support that?
Well, Governor Jan Brewer just vetoed that bill in Arizona because she felt that that was a bridge too far, that it wouldn't be up to the authenticators in each state to do that, that that would be a federal issue. There is a federal piece of legislation that hasn't gone anywhere that would also require that the candidates put forward their birth certificate. I have no problem giving my birth certificate. It wouldn't bother me at all. I've got one. It's authenticated. Take it.
Well, but so does the president. According to the bill, a candidate for president or vice president shall attach to and file with the affidavit a copy of the candidate's birth certificate certified by the appropriate official in the candidate's state of birth.
And that's right.
Well, I have the president's certificate right here. It's certified. It's got a certification number. It's got the registrar of the state signed. It's got a seal on it. And it says this copy serves as prima facie evidence of the fact of birth in any court proceeding.
Well, then that should settle it.
So it's over.
That's what should settle it. I take the president at his word. And I think for any, I would have no problem. Then apparently the president wouldn't either. Introduce that, we're done. Move on.
Well, this has been introduced. So this story's over.
Well, as long as someone introduces it, I guess it's over.
It's right there.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay,
because that is not the main issue facing the United States right now. The main issue facing the United States is dealing with our debt.
And that's the most important and correct thing that she does actually note there. But yes, the certificate that Stephanopoulos shows is the one that, of course, is supplied by FactCheck, which, of course, is a subsidiary of Annenberg, which, of course, is a subsidiary of the Chicago Annenberg Challenge, which is connected to the Obama, Rezko, Blagojevich, Chicago, Ayers, corruption, gangster land that, of course, is now being overseen by the Mossad mayor. Continuing on the news purge of caffeinated consciousness, we reach our Oregon oddities with a pretty massive breakdown from our own Oregonian on the Rajneeshis in Oregon, the untold story. I first heard of these guys from a coworker who knew what I do with the site and show and mentioned them, and he was like, oh yeah, you should know about that. You would be interested in that. It was a cult that moved here in the 80s. And in the five-part story that ran last week in the Oregonian, one of the more salacious bits that, of course, caught my eye was concerning their 1984 bioterror attack using salmonella and other toxins to poison Oregonians. Again, more on that fascinating story of the Rajneeshis cult in Oregon, the untold story. It's at OregonLive.com/Rajneesh. That's Rajneesh. Furthermore, in the Oregon oddities, also from the Oregonian, and so many things that I get from the Oregonian and the New York Times are because those are the physical newspapers I look at while I'm on break at work, and this one caught my eye. Intel surprises schools with influx of Israelis. So for some reason, Intel, which of course was just recently visited by the Obamasiah here in Oregon, brought in dozens of Israeli families, and then all the kids went out through all the schools. And why would this be important? Because we've seen this pattern before with Israeli spy rings. You may or may not be familiar with the art student spy rings or Jonathan Pollard or any number of spies connected to the apartheid state of Israel established the same year as the National Security Act and Roswell and all those other things. But just Google the bee thing. Furthermore, we reported for you last week that a woman was raped in the New World Airport. That's the Denver International Airport. And the unfortunate update is that an Oregon Marine has been arrested as that Denver Airport rapist. More on that from Reuters. AlaskaDispatch.com reporting that Alaskan Kip Walker's public suicide in Bend, Oregon, at the Strictly Organic Coffee House at an open mic night. He played a song called Sorry About the Mess and then proceeded to stab himself in the chest, and folks thought it was theater, and they thought it was part of the show, but it was not. It's apparently a part of the mass murder contagion that we've discussed here so very, very many times. And again, we ask the question, what is it about mid-April and violence in the United States? And I don't think we have the answer to that question, unfortunately. And it gets even worse, my friends. Well, I'll also note that that suicide, Kip Walker, also reminded me of Kip Kinkle, the Oregon school shooter from the late 90s. And it gets even worse. A 14-year-old kid was shot outside of a Portland mall. And we can get this story from KXL.com and the unfortunate update from Columbian.com, where this 14-year-old Portland kid, Shiloh Hampton, died the next day in the hospital of his gunshot wounds. And it's in my neighborhood. This is right where I live. It's right where I walked on my way coming to the station today. I crossed Northeast 11th and Multnomah, the place where this poor kid was shot as part of what essentially is going to be a race war. It's going to be an economic class war. and it's all being bred, just as we noted that U.S. Special Forces trained the Las Zetas. Where do you think all these ideas come from? And it makes me ill. Woman sues Portland police for not letting her put on pants after her arrest, but before her being taken downtown. And our last note on Oregon Oddities, I guess, is a lighter note, because it was quite surprising. If you have a Yahoo email account, which many of you may, as so many of us do, you get the funny tabloid news and the silly stories. And the other day, there was this girl, Logan, that I used to work with at the grocery store here in Portland, and she had an article published by CNN Money called "Help, I'm Addicted to Infomercials." And she essentially writes about how all that crap doesn't do anything for you. And she's right. We shift gears to our Police State International updates on this 421 News Purge, Caffeinated Consciousness, with a piece from WeAin'tGotTimeToBleed.com from independent Jesse Ventura, who is also in that wrestling predictive programming clip that we heard earlier, talking about someone being part of the cover-up. But here's a quick letter to the ruling class. Maybe we could look at this as our response to the piece George Carlin ended our previous episode with. You control our world. You poison the air we breathe, contaminated the water we drink, and copyrighted the food we eat. We fight in your wars, die for your causes, and sacrifice our freedoms to protect you. You've liquidated our savings, destroyed our middle class, and used our tax dollars to bail out your unending greed. We are slaves to your corporations, zombies to your airwaves, servants to your decadence. You've stolen our elections, assassinated our leaders, and abolished our basic rights as human beings. You own our property, shipped away our jobs, and shredded our unions. You've profited off disasters, destabilized our currencies, and raised our cost of living. You've monopolized our freedom, stripped away our education, and have almost extinguished our flame. We are hit, we are bleeding, but we ain't got time to bleed. We will bring the giants to their knees, and you will witness our revolution. Sincerely, the serfs. And that's the letter to the ruling class on WeAin'tGotTimeToBleed.com. Another piece from Captain Eric May of Ghost Troop. This may also be posted on VeteransToday.com, but I have it on FavStocks.com, and his breakdown on the false flag Passover peril that we are soaking in April 19th through the 22nd, but many others predicting up until May Day 1st of possible deteriorating situations. But again, I don't want you to think on this show that we spend time thinking, oh, on this day it's going to go down. Oh, this prediction is going to happen, because ultimately it never works out that way. But forewarned is forearmed, as they say. TSA security looks at people who complain about TSA security. So the lesson here that we learn from CNN is to show no emotion. You can blend in with the zombies, just as we've seen on Invasion of the Body Snatchers or Shaun of the Dead. The feds tell the Supreme Court, you should allow warrantless GPS monitoring. More on that from Threat Level. And the cops using mobile scanner to steal cell phone data from innocent Americans. We reference that story on the most recent episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, and we flesh it out more over on Cyberspace War, that, of course, they've been doing it for a long time. It's only now coming out, and it's only now getting coverage. Apple and Google and iPhone and all of those things. Anger rises after Camden, New Jersey police officer kills a dog. More on that from CourierPostOnline.com. As we're connecting the memes and the animals and the police brutality and even the mass animal die-offs. And downtown Miami had their own little Homeland Security black helicopter moment. And was it a drill or was it a regular pickup from the Bank of America on the roof? Or was it both? Our last section on the 421 News Purge of Caffeinated Consciousness is War Horrors, and we begin with another sad media-related note.
Photojournalist Tim Hetherington, the co-director of the Oscar-nominated war documentary film Restrepo, was killed in the besieged Libyan town of Misrata on Wednesday. The photographer was among a group caught by mortar fire on Tripoli Street, the main thoroughfare leading into the center of Misrata, the only major rebel-held town in western Libya, and besieged by Muammar Gaddafi's forces for more than 7 weeks. Hetherington, also a still photographer, who won the 2007 World Press Photo of the Year Award, co-directed with Sebastian Younger the 2010 Afghan War documentary Restrepo, which was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Documentary. Tim Hetherington was 41. John Russell, Reuters.
The Christian Science Monitor on just why Obama agreed to unleash predator drones on Gaddafi forces and our most favored nation, according to the United Nations. China's J-20 stealth fighter makes a second test flight, and that brings a close to the 421 News Purge Caffeinated Consciousness, and we still have three posts to go through in the remainder of this episode, 215 from MediaMonarchy.com, my friends. U.S. secretly backing Syrian opposition since 2006. The story comes from Reuters, and we covered it quite extensively, I think, on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, so I will point you right back there to get a great breakdown from James Corbett. But from the Deutsche Press Agency, the first anniversary of the BP disaster, of course, was on 420, as the payouts are low and the fears are high. At first sight, everything looks back to normal on the Gulf of Mexico a year after the worst oil disaster in U.S. history, but fear and uncertainty persist. Gone are the angry banners, BP, we want our beach back, that vented the fury of the people of Grand Isle and nearby Holiday and Fisherman's Islands in Louisiana's far south. But one only has to scratch the surface to find the anger again.
It's been about a year since the worst environmental catastrophe in U.S. history. And we're talking, of course, about the Deepwater Horizon spill and the Gulf oil spill that came from it. We're joined by Shauna Sanford and Charlie Winham of Louisiana Public Broadcasting. They've been there for the past year. They've been covering several stories on this, and they join us now from the studios. Thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Hari.
Thanks, Hari.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about a couple of the big picture stories that you've been focused on for this one-year anniversary special. Shauna, let's start with you. There's so much concern about how people are being recompensated, whether they're able to get back to their normal lives, and how the money is trickling down into that region. What's happening?
It's a mixed bag. I got a chance to spend some time with a gentleman, Preston Dore, who's been a commercial fisherman for the last 30 years. He was one of the lead vessels in the Vessel of Opportunity program. He said when they got the call, he was actually in the middle of shrimping. He was looking for 2010 to be a comeback year after struggling after Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. Got the call from BP to go out, and he didn't hesitate. He worked with several other vessels, and during that time, he suffered a lot. His boat, as he described it, the shrimping boat was really not designed for the kind of work that they were doing, but they were going to the aid of their country, he said. They were going to the aid of the Gulf. They were fighting to save the coast. They were fighting to save their industry. So they were doing everything that they possibly could to capture the oil, to stop the oil, and to get back to business as usual. Well, since that time, he's had a very, very difficult time. He's been unable to put his boat back out in the water. He fears the contamination from the chemicals that were used, and so he's not able to put that boat back out there, and as a result, he's financially in a big, big bind. Now, there have been some fishermen who have filed their claims, who have settled. They've been compensated, but then there are many, many others who have not been compensated.
So posted below this first anniversary of BP disaster posting, we get our related BioWars and ViroHealth updates, and the biggest odorless, colorless elephant in the room. The projected 9 months to stop the Fukushima radiation leak is really optimistic. More on that from the IntelHub.com. Radiation spreads throughout the northern hemisphere. That is from globalresearch.ca, as new radiation limits raised 500% for Fukushima plant workers. As naturalnews.com reporting, Japanese government censors Fukushima reports that contradict the official story. and let's get more perspective. Let's get an audio flashback from a site called Living on Earth with a story that goes back a couple of years. So needless to say, it is pre-3/11 Japan crisis, a nuclear incident worse than Three Mile Island covered up for 45 years.
Nuclear power plant accidents, Chernobyl in the Ukraine, Windscale in the UK, and the Santa Susana Field Lab in California. Those incidents are the top three releasers of radioactive iodine in nuclear power history, but number three has slipped largely under the radar. The Boeing Rocketdyne Nuclear Facility, also referred to as the Santa Susana Field Lab, is located about 30 miles northwest of downtown Los Angeles, near the Simi Valley area. And in 1959, a clogged coolant channel in a 20-megawatt nuclear reactor led to the melting of 30% of the fuel elements in the reactor core. Iodine-131, that is, radioactive iodine, was released in doses estimated up to 100 times that of Three Mile Island, enough to cause various types of cancers and thyroid abnormalities, particularly in children under the age of 15. And while radioactive iodine only has an 8-day half-life, that's more than enough time to get into local dairy cows and contaminate the milk supply. The facility also released many other radioactive materials, as well as other toxic chemicals, over a period of years. After an 8-year-long court battle, more than 100 local residents reached a settlement with Boeing Rocketdyne. Dr. Arjun Makajani provided scientific testimony for the plaintiffs. He's the president of the Institute for Energy and Environmental Research and a former advisor to the EPA on nuclear matters. Hello, sir.
Hi, Steve.
So, tell me the story of what happened in California. Now, why is it that nobody ever heard about this?
Well, it was a sodium-cooled reactor that had a problem that had been detected in terms of contamination in the core. And they ran the reactor anyway. And then in the middle of July, they had a partial meltdown, and there was a release of radiation. The iodine-131 releases were somewhere between 80 and 100 times bigger than the iodine-131 releases from Three Mile Island. And there had been a reactor accident at Windscale in Britain 2 years prior, which had an even larger release of iodine from there. And after attempting to sort of cover it up or hide the consequences, in a day or two, the British authorities decided to go largely public. They collected milk from a 200-square-mile area, I believe 500,000 gallons, if I remember the number correctly, and they dumped it. So they actually went and sampled the milk, collected it, and I felt that at the time of the Rocketdyne accident in 1959, that example was available to the authorities. And yet, despite that public health example, they did not follow a sound procedure. And then the officials concluded that, although we don't really understand the accident, we don't think anything was released. And that became the accepted theory for 45 years. So essentially, people were led to believe that there were no serious releases of radioactivity, especially in terms of iodine, from this accident. And so the subsidiary questions as to who was hurt, whether somebody got thyroid cancer, and so on, were not really raised until this lawsuit was filed.
And as we noted on our recent mixtape, On a Wave of Mutilation, history repeats itself. U.S. fears overdue megathrust earthquake will trigger tsunami and decimate an unprepared Northwest. And on around the country, tornadoes claim at least 9 lives in the U.S. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. 17 dead following a series of tornadoes across the U.S. A swarm of Nevada quakes have experts concerned. That's from MyNews4.com. But a record 241 tornadoes claimed 40 lives in the U.S. in the last week or so. And even more so, and even tying it all together, U.S. tornadoes force shutdown of 2 nuclear reactors in Virginia. More on that from The Guardian. PressCorps.ca getting into HAARP. And, of course, the accusations are there of possible weather modification. Tesla could do it. Shirley Harp could probably do it now, but we're not diving into that debate right now. However, PressCorps.ca getting into the fact that the Harp website has been down for 3 weeks now, if not more. And is that to conceal evidence of U.S. weather modification? Question mark. But ABC News has it like this: tweaking the climate to save it. Who decides? That's right, it's called geoengineering, and we're all soaking in it. And the latest mass animal die-offs, thousands of dead fish scooped up from Ventura Harbor just a few days ago in California. As we have seen throughout this entire year so far, some of these mass animal die-off situations precede some natural, quote-unquote, disaster. Hey, it's the sun. Our last few related or semi-unrelated BioWars EnviroHealth updates come from foodsafetynews.com as the FDA cracks down on hand sanitizer claims, but I thought they fixed everything. BioPrepWatch.com returning to another elephant in the room as scientists and colleagues of Bruce Ivins still question his guilt. He would be the lone gunman in the anthrax attacks of 2001. And the last note from the New York Times asks the question, is sitting a lethal activity? And in addition to the fantastic original illustration that does go along with that story, I would say yes, it is. I would say yes, get out of your cubicle. If you drive in a car to go to work, to sit at a desk behind a cubicle, to then get in your car and go back home to go sit on the couch, yes, that is lethal on a number of levels, not the least of which is physical. And as we tie in all the rest of our BioWars, EnviroHealth, and radiation crisis updates, we close out with the last post on cyberspacewar.com as we note the possibility of radiation chic coming to America. Of course, we have seen it in Japan, and we have seen it in the wake of other bio outbreaks, and it's the face masks. We don't have time to get into any more of that, my friends. We are just about out of time on this jam-packed episode 215 for Great Friday, or a Good Friday to Free Your Mind, April 22nd, Earth Day, 2011. And, of course, my name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show at MediaMonarchy.com. In the last couple of moments, we'll glance back at the breaking news in that we see dozens now killed in Syria's bloodiest day of protest. And what did we report to you just a few short moments ago from Reuters? U.S. secretly backing Syrian opposition since 2006. It started under Bush, it's continuing under Obama, and it's the State Department funding, among other things, something called Barada TV. So that and so much more is going on around the world as we urge you to be vigilant and to pay attention to what's going on and to not lose your head in all of these things. Let's end on a happy note, shall we? Hop over to twitter.com/MediaMonarchy and we'll note that last Saturday was Record Store Day. That's the day that celebrates independent record stores, and I was very happy to go to one of my independent record stores here in Portland, Oregon, called Everyday Music, and I picked up some import 7-inch from Arctic Monkeys and new Nellie McKay and a limited edition Decemberist EP pressed in 2500 only for a Record Store Day. So that is how you vote with your dollar. And I would implore you, if you find this show valuable, to hit the donate button. And that's how we will continue to grow and go, my friends. That's it. April 22nd, 2011. Episode 215 of MediaMonarchy.com. As always, my friends, don't hate the media. Become the media. But oh, that's right. Get active or get radioactive. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the New World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com. plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send mixtapes to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.